This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. The electoral map of Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia is a sea of red with a few islands of blue. Of the 263 counties in the three states, only 9 went for Hillary Clinton. Now that Donald Trump is the president-elect, what do his supporters in the region want him to do? Jeff Young reports on what voters and voting data tell us about what motivated the Trump vote.
Ohio Valley Resource reporters asked Trump voters what they hope he will do as president.
More than Obama did. We need jobs.
I don't think Trump is some savior. He's not a savior. But he is somebody with a different perspective.
And I'm going to hold my breath and keep my fingers crossed and hope that he can affect some real change in this country.
We also asked some questions of the data, how county-by-county vote results match up with some key economic information about the region. The results offer some insights and raise some questions about what motivated Trump voters here. One obvious factor, anxiety over Kohl's collapse. Here are Eastern Kentucky Trump supporters Judy Collier and David Boggs.
We need jobs. Our coal jobs are gone here in Eastern Kentucky.
He'll put the coal business back together and straighten this country up a little bit, maybe.
Resource data reporter Alexandra Kanick looked at the votes for Clinton and Trump in those counties in the three-state region that produce the most coal.
They had 2, 3, sometimes even 6 times the amount of support for Trump.
Trump seized on coal's decline and pinned the blame on federal regulation. West Virginia University history professor Hal Gorby says that fits a long pattern in regional politics.
What was called the overreach of the EPA, it's often also referred to as the war on coal. That language has had a lot of support, obviously, before Trump was running to be president.
The war on coal is still politically potent, but it does not match well with facts. Executives at electric utilities say their move away from coal has more to do with economics than environmental regulation. Natural gas is just cheaper. Trump supporters also want manufacturing jobs to return. That's something Trump voters Martin Dofka and Jack Rose of Wheeling both talked about.
It sounds like he's going to try to bring jobs back into this country.
You know, and we've seen all these jobs that have been exported and outsourced to China and Mexico and Canada and, you know, wherever, anywhere but here.
While free trade has helped consumers and some companies, the Ohio Valley's heavy manufacturing base suffered. Many manufacturing and mining communities fell into economic distress. Resource reporter Kanick's analysis shows several counties with the worst poverty also had the greatest turnout for Trump.
Martin County, which has really high poverty, some of the highest in Kentucky, saw nearly 10 times as many voters coming out in support of Trump. In fact, no county in our region with poverty greater than 30% went blue.
The Appalachian Regional Commission says 54 counties in the region are economically distressed. All but one, Athens County, Ohio, went for Trump. Democratic positions on taxes and government services traditionally favor folks with low incomes. But Professor Gorby says it's not that simple. Democrats, he says, long ago drifted from a platform that appealed to many working people.
And this has left, and I think this is what we saw in this election cycle, it's left a lot of these people who live in the Rust Belt, who live in rural places like Appalachia, feeling that they have just been neglected.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Jeff Young in Louisville.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. According to the Department of Justice, each year more than 600,000 people return to our neighborhoods after serving time in federal and state prisons. Another 11 million cycle through local jails. And many people end up cycling right back into prison. Why? What's it like to be released? The Office of the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of West Virginia coordinates a program designed to help communities understand that experience. Gabrielle Marshall reports.
A crowd of about 50 community members gathered in the auditorium of the YWCA in Wheeling. Betsy Dividend is the first assistant United States attorney. She's also the reentry coordinator of the U.S. Attorney's Office. and she's produced what she calls an ex-convict reentry simulation.
Everybody who participates is given the identity of someone walking out of the prison doors, and they have tasks that they have to complete, the same that somebody in real life would.
In this reentry game, participants are making rounds to tables set around the room. Each table has a label, like DMV, probation, court, or pawn shop. But participants aren't just taking a stroll around the YWCA's auditorium. The whole experience lasts for about an hour.
Each 15-minute period will represent a week in your life.
Everyone is handed packets with their life cards, descriptions of their past history, any cash they might have, personal belongings, and sometimes a baby. But usually there's no valid form of identification. You start in your chair, which represents your home, and you win the game if by the end of the hour you return home. Otherwise, you end up in a halfway house, a homeless shelter, or back in prison.
Everybody ready?
No.
I followed Jane Blaylock through the simulation. She's a pro se law clerk for the United States District Court. She handles prisoner complaints and petitions primarily, but has never gone through the simulation. I ask her about what's in her packet.
My name is Rose, and I served 5 years in federal prison for possession with intent to distribute a controlled substance.
She has $30 to her name. She's a high school dropout with a microwave and a laptop, but no form of ID.
I'm unemployed, and I'm living with my significant other and his two children.
When I ask her what she's to do first, she becomes overwhelmed. She must see her probation officer, get counseling and treatment, buy food, pay rent, pay child support, get an ID, get a job, pay a traffic citation, get a urinary analysis, go to AA and NA and a GED class. And all of that will cost her about $710.
It doesn't look like it's going to be easy.
The game begins. First, she goes to get her ID. There's 14 people in line and no time to spare.
Hi, Rose. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
What do you need, Rose?
I need all my identity. I have no identification at all.
You have no identification, okay.
You just want to fill that out at that table, and then we can help you.
And then you'll have to get back in line.
The table is filled, and time is ticking, and the line is growing. The auditorium is bustling with pretend ex-convicts making their laps around the room. While Jane, or Rose rather, fills out her form, I spoke with Sonny Baxter, an ex-convict who was helping run the simulation.
You know, the details are definitely there. The pressure obviously isn't because it's mock, you know, but as far as a shell representing, you know, how things actually go, it's pretty accurate.
Baxter was a federal inmate in West Virginia for 3 years. Upon release, he found himself in a Wheeling with no family support nor any social safety net.
What was very important for me was finding supportive people along the way, you know, that understood my situation and actually assisted in me moving forward.
Today, Baxter's an operator at a factory and also tech support at Wheeling Jesuit University. He says, reality varies for each individual that's leaving incarcerated life, but upon release, it's far more than just making it to the bank or the grocery store.
It's a unique situation out here in Wheeling because there's no public transportation to Moundsville, which is where the DMV is at. So, you know, when you're in this area, you have to figure out a way to get some type of transportation in that area to get the ball rolling on everything else.
According to research from the Pew Center on the States, 1 in 4 released convicts will return to prison because they violated terms of the release. 10% return as a result of a new conviction. And for those with mental illness, the rates are even higher. When I returned to Jane, she was in a halfway house because she violated the terms of her parole, but she didn't stay there long.
I'm going to jail.
By the end of the simulation, she was back in prison, along with 2/3 of the rest of the participants. 6 people landed in the halfway house, and 2 were in the homeless shelter. 2 of the 4 babies were in Child Protective Services, 1 was relocated, and 1 died of starvation. Jividen says these are some of the most true-to-life results they've seen.
We've done it in the Eastern Panhandle for community service providers. We've done it in Morgantown. We've done it at Wheeling Jesuit University. And we've done it at several of our facilities.
The atmosphere during the simulation was lighthearted, with community members running around in their business attire with lanyards and baby dolls. But everyone left realizing that for many people, this isn't a game. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Gabrielle Marshall in Wheeling.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:54. Windy today with variable cloudiness, scattered snow possible in the east, temperatures in the 30s and low 40s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 20s, mostly sunny tomorrow with highs remaining in the 30s and 40s.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the West Virginia Department of Education, now allowing you to track your local school success with West Virginia's A through F accountability system. Local school grades available at mywvschool.org. And by the United Way of the River City, seeking volunteer income tax preparers in the greater Huntington region to help low and moderate income families claim earned tax credits. Details at UnitedWayRiverCities.org.
And now some poetry. This morning, West Virginia's poet laureate Mark Harshman highlights a former poet laureate of Maryland, Linda Pastan.
Welcome to the Poetry Break. Today we're going to be listening to the wonderful poet Linda Pastan. Pastan's had an amazingly prolific career, in the course of which she's won the Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize and twice been named a finalist for the National Book Award. She is, as well, past Poet Laureate of Maryland. I fondly remember hearing Linda read in the mid-70s in Pittsburgh and have loved her work ever since. And Pastan is always a thoughtful witness to the world, since we need poems like this more than ever these days. Somewhere in the world. Somewhere in the world, something is happening which will make its slow way here. A cold front will come to destroy the camellias, or perhaps it will be a heat wave to scorch them. A virus will move without passport or papers to find me as I shake a hand or kiss a cheek. Somewhere a small quarrel has begun. A few overheated words ignite a conflagration, and the smell of smoke is on its way, the smell of war. Wherever I go, I knock on wood, on tabletops or tree trunks. I rinse my hands over and over again. I scan the newspapers and invent alarm codes which are not my husband's birth date or my own. But somewhere something is happening against which there is no planning, only those two aging conspirators, hope and luck. The happiest day. It was early May, I think, a moment of lilac or dogwood, when so many promises are made it hardly matters if a few are broken. My mother and father still hovered in the background, part of the scenery, like the houses I had grown up in, and if they would be torn down later, that was something I knew but didn't believe. Our children were asleep or playing. The youngest as new as the new smell of the lilacs. And how could I have guessed their roots were shallow and would be easily transplanted? I didn't even guess that I was happy. The small irritations that are like salt on melon were what I dwelt on, though in truth they simply made the fruit taste sweeter. So we sat on the porch in the cool morning, sipping hot coffee. Behind the news of the day, strikes and small wars, a fire somewhere, I could see the top of your dark head and thought not of public conflagrations, but of how it would feel on my bare shoulder. If someone could stop the camera then, if someone could only stop the camera and ask me, "Are you happy?" Perhaps I would have noticed how the morning shone in the reflected color of lilac. "Yes," I might have said, and offered a steaming cup of coffee. These selections have come from the book Carnival Evening, New and Selected Poems, 1968 to 1998, by Linda Pastan, published by W.W. Norton. used with permission by Linda Paston, courtesy of the Jean Nagar Agency. This has been the Poetry Break. I'm Mark Harshman, wishing you good words in the air and on the page.
That was an excerpt of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's poetry podcast called The Poetry Break. You can find this month's episode and many others online at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. I'm Beth Voorhees.